It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Kyle from LaGrange Barber, along with Bubba Rosenbaum. What's going on, Bubba?
Not a whole lot. Just got a home from the baseball game, Southern Collegiate Baseball League here in the greater Charlotte area. The team I work for is Lake Norman Copperheads, and we actually had a 7-0 lead tonight and gave up 8 runs in the top of the 7th inning and ended up losing 10-7. So a rough night for the Copperheads, but looking forward to talking some Pirate football and other things now.
Blew a 7-point lead. Blues 8-7. You can smell the whiskey burning down Copperhead Road. Dave obviously is not here tonight. He is on assignment. I'm not sure what his assignment is, but he's on it. But Dave will be back with us here on the next episode and take back over the hosting reins. But I will do my best to fill his shoes tonight.
Very capable host.
Very well. We'll see. Bubba, tonight we're joined by Stevie Fly from what's the name of his Facebook page?
Stevie Fly. He has the final score. He talks to former Pirate football players and then other sports related guests.
Yeah, Stevie does a good job with that. You can check him out on Facebook. Just search the final score there on Facebook and like his page. He has all kinds of guests up there from like Bubba said, former ECU football players to other sports personalities, professional wrestlers like the Russian Nightmare Nikita Koloff. Later on in the podcast, we'll have a long conversation with him about Pirate football and professional wrestling. It's a lot of fun. Stevie's a cool guy from the northeastern part of North Carolina. I think the name of the town is Lasker or something like that. It's in the northeastern part of the state, little crossroads. But he'll join us later. But Bubba, right now, man, the hot topic in the world of college sports involves the American Athletic Conference, and it is the UConn Huskies deciding to leave the American to go join the Big East and rejoin their old basketball brethren like Villanova and Seton Hall, et cetera. I understand the move from a standpoint where, you know, they've been hemorrhaging money up there, they're a basketball first school. I mean, hell, you could say football is the number 3 sport there behind women's basketball. I get it. They feel more comfortable playing those northeastern teams that they have history of playing. Returning, you know, to Madison Square Garden for the Big East tournament, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's their lineage. The only problem is their football program. I don't know how they're going to exist as an FBS program. I'm assuming they're going to go independent. I guess maybe if the MAC would want to re-add UMass and add UConn with them, they could go to 14 and have a nice presence in the Northeast with UConn, UMass, and Buffalo. But besides that, they're going to have to go independent. And I don't know how successful they'll be doing that. You know, at this point, I almost think they should go FCS, but you know, that's their problem. But I know there's been a lot of people being critical of the decision, and I do think if they ever want to be in a Power 5 league or a so-called Power 5 league, I think it is a bad decision because I think they've just killed their football program. Not that it was doing well anyway. But if they're happy with being in the Big East, if they're happy with that being their home for the foreseeable future for the next 20 years or so, then I get the move.
Yeah, as do I. As I said on the most recent podcast we had where Dave and I discussed this when it was breaking over the weekend when you were out of town on vacation, so we really understood the move with UConn's tradition and just them being a basketball-first school, as you already mentioned. But like you were saying, as far as the football program goes, they've pretty much been rock bottom. It'd be hard to go much lower than they've been the last few years in terms of their football program. So I'm very interested to see how they schedule when they become an independent, if that is in fact what happens, like it appears it will be. So are they yes, they can schedule some people like Boston College, Syracuse, Pittsburgh, etc., Rutgers, but to fill a 12-game schedule, it'll be very, very interesting to see how many of those regional opponents they're able to lock up pretty much year in, year out.
Yeah, I'm not sure those schools have interest in playing UConn. I mean, as an independent, you know, I know there's some history between Syracuse and UConn and BC and UConn and Pitt and UConn. And so you would think there'd be some interest, but not on a yearly basis. Not every one of those schools will play them. Maybe every year or so. I mean, Rutgers also. You know, then you look, UMass, I'm sure, will be happy to play them yearly. Liberty, I'm sure, will be happy to play them on an annual basis. Other independents, Army. So let's say they could get Army, Liberty, UMass, New Mexico State's another independent. So that's four opponents that they should be at the top on a regular basis. Besides that, you know, like you said, can they get some of those Northeastern Power Five opponents? They'll probably be able to. Then you're going to have an FCS, maybe even two FCS in some years. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. Buffalo is another school, Bubba, up there in that area that I'm sure will have some interest in playing Connecticut. So they could put together a schedule that's appealing, and you know, maybe not every year, but most years. It may work out good for them. I don't know. They're leaving an awful lot of money on the table with this new TV contract. I can tell you that much. Because the Big East doesn't play football, and they're never going to match our money in terms of a television contract. Now, you could argue that they can match it in terms of other sources of revenue, like you know, NCAA tournament appearances, you know, the fees you get from that. But hell, this year the American had more teams in the NCAA basketball tournament than the Big East did, didn't they?
Actually, I don't recall the exact number. I do know the RPI. The RPI of the Big East was fifth, and the American was sixth. So I think it was pretty comparable.
Okay, for some reason I thought we got four in and they got three, but I could be totally wrong on that. Either way, I get the move. Now, I do say they're leaving some money on the table, though. Now, the question is, going forward, what does the American do? The talk, everybody seems to be saying it's going to be BYU, Army, or nobody. In other words, if BYU as a football only says no, and Army as a football only says no, then we're not going to add anyone. So, you know, the question would be, which one of those two would you rather have? And do you add someone like VCU in all other sports to offset BYU or Army, like we do with Wichita State, to offset Navy?
I'd say in terms of BYU and Army, I would, as much as I like Army, I've been up there when the Pirates played them back in 1995. That was a beautiful venue. They've been very good in recent years under Coach Munkin. But I think I would certainly opt for BYU. With the national brand and everything they bring to the table, if they were willing.
Yeah, a national brand, lots of tradition, won the national championship back in the 80s. You got the, you know, the Mormon Church there that supports them pretty much, kind of like the Catholic Church with Notre Dame. So it would be, if they're willing to come, that's the whole thing. Is BYU willing to come? They are able to put together a very attractive home schedule as an independent. They've got their own contract with ESPN. I think it's somewhat similar money to our new contract with ESPN, maybe a little less per school. I think their contract with ESPN was maybe $4 million, and ours is $6 million. They're about to renegotiate that contract with ESPN, so it'll be interesting to see what they get. So from revenue standpoint, maybe not a big jump for them to join the American. But as you know, there was an article today in a paper in Utah about how maybe financially going to the American would be a lateral move. But in terms of access to bowl games and having the opportunity to go to a New Year's Six bowl, That's something BYU right now. You know, I don't know if some people realize this, Bubba. They're not eligible for that New Year's Six bowl spot from the Group of Five because they are not in a Group of Five conference. The only way BYU could ever get one of the New Year's Six bowls is to get an at-large, which means they're going to have to go undefeated or 11-1, maybe. Well, not even 10-2. I don't think they'd ever get an at-large even 10-2. So undefeated or 11-1. If they join the American, if you win the American, you've got about a 50-50 shot of being the Group of Five representative in that New Year's Six Bowl. Maybe right. Better than 50-50.
Yeah, like what you're saying, that's a great point because BYU certainly has the deck stacked against them in terms of getting into one of those New Year's Six Bowls. But that's what you think back. They don't have the benefit of something like Notre Dame had. Remember with the old BCS system where Notre Dame, if they were ranked and they had the Notre Dame calls, is what it amounted to. If they were ranked, I don't know if it was the top eight or what it was, then they were guaranteed one of those slots, which was something that I strongly disliked.
Yeah, I agree with you. BYU doesn't have anything like that. And, you know, if you look at since they've gone independent, it's off the top of my head, Bubba, I don't think they've been into a very appealing bowl game. You know, I remember them playing in the now defunct Miami Beach Bowl against Memphis one year.
They also had, I don't know that they played in it, I can't recall, but in addition to that agreement with the Miami Beach Bowl, it seems like they maybe had an agreement with, was it the Poinsettia Bowl or the Armed Forces Bowl?
Yeah, I believe they did play the Poinsettia Bowl. They've been to bowl games since they've gone independent on a regular basis, just nothing very appealing. If they were to join the American, in addition to the opportunity to play in a New Year's Six Bowl, if they win the league, they would also have, you know, the Military Bowl against the ACC. Depending on how our bowl negotiations are coming up, but it looks like we're going to have several attractive bowl tie-ins this go around. Potentially we could have as many as four or five games against Power Five opponents, depending on how things play out. So there could be some appealing bowl matchups to lure BYU. That's the obvious choice.
Something else, Kyle, before we move on from BYU is, and you may have mentioned this when you were talking about their TV exposure situation, but kind of like Texas has the Longhorn Network, and BYU, they have what's called
BYU
TV. So, and I don't know a lot of the specifics of that, but that's something that they have going for them as well.
Another day, Bubba, their football games are aired on ESPN. I think maybe they'll show like one game a year that ESPN doesn't pick up home game on BYU TV. I do think their ESPN games are available for replay on BYU TV. I don't know how much of a big revenue stream that is for them for football. I'm quite sure for replay purposes, something could be worked out if they join the American. It's an ESPN property either way, so you see what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I really don't know that that's a big issue. So I heard somebody else mention that, and I really, in this particular case, I don't think that's a big issue.
Right. And what you said makes perfect sense, but that's what I was saying, that I didn't know a lot of the ins and outs and just particulars of BYU TV, but
right. And then the other one, if BYU says no, I would think the second phone call would be to Army. And I do think Army would be interested in coming, except there's going to be one caveat that could hold things up, and that's what do you do with the Army-Navy game? Army-Navy is a special game. It means a lot not only to the Army and Navy programs, it means a lot to the country. It's got a lot of traditions. You know, presidents go to that game. It's always played in December by itself. Weekend after championship weekend. It's, you know, what do you do with it? You can't play it the weekend after championship weekend. You can't play a championship weekend because it would be a conference game at that point. There's a couple of ways around it. One, you just throw some ideas out there, Bubba. One to me would be moving to week zero. Right now, there's 1 to 2 games played on week zero. This year, you're going to have Miami versus Florida, Arizona versus Hawaii. Make it the only game on week zero. It's the start of college football season. Imagine every year in August, we start with Army-Navy. What a way to start the college football season. It's the only game in town. Another idea I had, if you want to keep it late in the season because it is such a special game and it's a rivalry game and it's what they build to, you know, on Thanksgiving weekend every year, which is traditionally known as rivalry weekend, there are games played on Black Friday and on Saturday. Well, what if all games are just played on the traditional Saturday and you reserve Black Friday for Army-Navy?
Yeah, kind of like I'm trying to remember if it was Thursday or Black Friday that you would always have
Egg Bowl on Thursday. Is that what you're talking about back in the day?
Well, actually, I guess it was Friday then that I was thinking of where you would have Texas A&M back when they were still playing.
Yeah, that was always, you know, one time I believe that was Thanksgiving night also. I believe the Egg Bowl and Texas A&M were Thanksgiving night. The Egg Bowl was moved from Thanksgiving night at one point. And I think it may be back on Thanksgiving night now. But either way,
because I always love seeing that Texas A&M rivalry.
Yeah, it was great. And they need to start playing it again. But if you could do that where it's the only game on Black Friday and just play your traditional Saturday games, there's no reason you can't do that. And then the third option, and I don't like this option, would be to make Army-Navy not count towards conference standings. And to me, I don't like that at all. If they're both in the conference, it should be a conference game.
Yeah, I certainly agree with your last sentiment. Your week zero idea is one that's very intriguing. That would seem very weird from the standpoint that you're used to that game being played when it's cold weather, and seeing the cadets in Philadelphia or Baltimore, wherever the game's being played, that particular
with their overcoats on,
watching them sweat in the stands would be kind of weird. But it's from the standpoint of having the stage to themselves, that certainly would accomplish that. And then your other idea, I think, is a decent idea as well, in the way you may have to go about it should this come to fruition.
Yeah, I think that would be more – I think the week zero idea is actually easier for everybody else. I think Army-Navy would be more agreeable to doing it on Black Friday. You're just going to have to get – and I don't think it's other schools – I think the other schools would be fine with playing all the games on Saturday versus some of them on Black Friday. But you're going to have to get ESPN to agree to play along and let CBS have that stage as Army-Navy having Black Friday. I think that would probably be the easiest solution. If you could work something like that out, I really think Army would be interested in coming. Now, if you add Army, in this world, BYU has said no, Army has said yes. Do you bring in VCU or somebody else for all other sports to offset them, like with Wichita State coming in later to offset Navy? Or do you just let it go like it is with 11 members for all other sports?
And yeah, Kyle, VCU right now is obviously in the Atlantic 10, a very solid league, pretty strong basketball, but they would certainly, in my opinion, be very interested in the American, because I think this year the A-10 was something like 10th or 11th in their RPI, so it would be a substantial jump up for the Rams, and they're certainly very appealing. They've had pretty strong baseball as well down through the years.
Yeah, and more on the A-10. They were a little down this year. Most of the A-10 has a better year than that. The A-10's television contract isn't very good. I can't remember what it is financially, but
I think it's with NBC.
NBC Sports Network, yes. We would give them much better exposure on the ESPN family of networks. And not only that, you much more money. They don't get the football money, but they do get a bigger bump in pay. There's no doubt they would come. The opportunity to play in the same league with with Wichita State, Cincinnati, Memphis, Temple. There's still a lot of great basketball teams in this league, even though UConn's gone. So, you would be in favor of bringing in VCU rather than just bringing them football only and leaving that spot blank for all other sports. You'd be in favor of bringing in VCU.
Yes.
Anyone else, any other candidates, if we do bring out a football only besides VCU for all other sports? I can't really think of anyone.
Yeah, no one's really coming to mind. I mean, you've seen some that have been tossed around. I know, I'm trying to remember if it's Barstool Sports on Twitter that threw out Buffalo. Of course, the Bulls have
had. Well, that would be an all sports ad.
I'm sorry, yes, it's all sports. But yeah, as far as I didn't hear your question, but.
Instead of VCU.
Instead of just VCU, it's about in basketball where they didn't have football. No, not really.
Yeah, maybe somebody else in the ATN. I'd have to look.
Maybe a Davidson or somebody like that.
Yeah. Dayton. Is Dayton the Flyers? Are they still in the ATN or are they in the Big East?
They are. Dayton would be another.
Dayton. So yeah. I would say VCU or Dayton would be the two candidates to offset Army or BYU. Now, in terms of other candidates for all sports, if we're going to go all sports here, I saw, like you said, Buffalo was mentioned. Buffalo's a program that's on the rise, basketball and football wise. They got a big budget, from what I understand. They really just hadn't invested in athletics until recently. You would replace that Northeastern market. So, Buffalo could be a candidate. ODU's been mentioned just up the road in Norfolk. ODU, while they haven't performed very well on the gridiron or the court really here recently, they certainly have a lot of tradition in basketball, and I think that school has a lot of potential. I don't know if that would be the best move for East Carolina for ODU to come in the league and then be on equal footing with us in terms of recruiting, but I do think ODU has a huge upside. To me, a sentimental favorite, Bubba, would be Southern Miss. And I think they would be for you, too. So, and for most Pirates, Southern Miss is a school East Carolina has a lot of history and tradition with. I have personal relationships with some guys from Southern Miss, some of my best friends who are Golden Eagles. So I'd love to see USM. They have history with not only East Carolina, but Tulane, Memphis, Cincinnati, pretty much every damn school in the league, with the exception of Navy, Wichita State, and that's it. They really have history with everyone else.
Yeah, like you were saying, Kyle, back, I guess, 6 years ago or so now, when we received that Big East invite and Southern Miss did not, obviously I was very excited for us, but at the same time, I'm not going to lie. There was a part of me, I kind of felt like, we're leaving a brother behind in Southern Mississippi.
I agree with you.
There was a part of me that hurt for the Golden Eagles, because I think their fan base is pretty similar to East Carolina.
They are. Not as many of them, but they're very like-minded as the Pirates. They've had to put up with a lot of the same crap we've had to put up with from Ole Miss and Mississippi State, like we have from UNC and NC State. I tell you, I think Southern Miss has been a victim of modern college athletics, with media markets ruling the day, and I think they got a lot of budget issues down there that may hold them up. But if you just give me my sentimental choice, and I'm not thinking about anything except who I like and really who deserves it, I'd go Southern Miss. I know, obviously, BYU is great for exposure, and it's always great to be affiliated with such a great name brand. Army makes a lot of sense because of Navy and the potential money to be made there with that Army-Navy game being a conference game. But just from a pure emotional standpoint, and they deserve it, Southern Miss would be my pick.
And Kyle, another couple of schools that we failed to mention, actually three more, a couple from Conference USA and then one from the Sun Belt. You have UAB in Charlotte, You've seen, I've seen their names tossed around, and then also App State from the Sun Belt.
Let me tell you something, man. If UAB got into the American over Southern Miss, I'd be livid. And if I was Southern Miss fans, I think I'd sue every damn body in the American Conference and maybe everybody in college football for antitrust law or something like that. I mean, that would just be sickening. Something I thought about with Charlotte and Appalachian and East Carolina being the American. I wonder if any one of those schools or both will approach Roy Cooper about pushing East Carolina to vote for them and to push for them to be added to the American.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I know back several years ago, prior to Virginia Tech coming into the ACC, that UVA went to bat for them.
They were told they had to by their governor.
Right.
So I do wonder if you put a gun to my head, it had to be one of those two. I'd go Appalachian just because they deserve it. They have a great football program. Charlotte shouldn't even be where they are now in terms of football. They started the football program up and was given Conference USA overnight, so we had to work for. And that's no disrespect to Charlotte or Charlotte fans. It's just a fact. They started football up and were made FBS and put in Conference USA overnight. And I'll be damned if they deserve to be in the American.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with that. Between Charlotte and Old Dominion, Old Dominion's hands down the choice if it came between those two, which I don't think it will.
Yeah, or Charlotte and Appalachian.
Oh, yeah, and Appalachian. That's what you really look at it, and you take a look at Old Dominion. They were a startup football program like Charlotte, and Charlotte, they drew okay for a while. But the novelty, in my opinion, has worn off. And, yeah, they haven't had a good product on the field. And Old Dominion had a much more consistent product on the field. But Old Dominion, they were filling their stadium, their Foreman Field. And they were filling it back when they were playing Chowan and some different teams. Whether it's Chowan or Norfolk State or whoever they play, they fill that place up game in, game out.
No doubt. I mean, they've done a good job. And I was also making the comparison between App and Charlotte. App has got a great tradition in football, obviously most of it at the FCS level, but still they've been playing football just as long as we have, if not longer. And national championships at the FCS level, and immediately carry that success over the FBS. They've been tremendously successful since joining the Sun Belt. So if you had to choose between Charlotte and Appalachian, I'd go Appalachian. Those members, you know, even playing football, it's still 11 ways, so yeah. But the pie gets sliced 11 ways.
Yeah, so, that's one of the things I was telling Dave when we were talking the other day is just that's what you obviously have to be very thorough and do your homework and really figure out what the new additions to the conference would bring in terms of TV money, excuse me, et cetera, because you have to remember that the pie is going to be divided one more way, two more ways, or three more ways. I guess it would either be one or three, but yeah, you got to make sure that the money's right. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense at all.
You know, lost my train of thought, Bubba. But we'll move on from that. Yeah. Conference realignment was always fun to talk about, and right now we're just centered around the American. Bubby, you want to get to our guest, Stevie Fly? By the way, Stevie Fly, man, his name, it's not spelled like it sounds. How do you spell his last name, Bubba?
Flythe. It looks like Flythe, but it's pronounced Fly.
Stevie Fly sounds like he would have been a rapper in the late 80s, early
90s. Yeah, it does, but we had an excellent conversation with Stevie here a few days ago, and let's go to that interview right now with Stevie Fly, who has the final score, where he interviews a variety of sports guests, and let's talk to Stevie right now.
Well, we started the podcast in March of 2018, and I think about the same time, our next guest, Bubba, he started a very special thing on Facebook that we've been a fan of, and now we get a chance to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, no doubt. Stevie Fly, he has the final score, catches up with a number of former Pirate football players from a variety of eras, and then also other intriguing sports guests from both basketball and otherwise, professional wrestling. And so, Stevie, welcome in.
Thank you, guys. What an honor it is to be on the show tonight. Thank you for having me.
It's an honor to have you. I know that Bubba and I have been talking about having you on for some time, and then obviously we love what you're doing. And, you know, one of the things that
Stevie, Kyle, I was against having you on, actually. I told him we didn't need to have you on.
Yeah, well, you were overruled 2 out of 3.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
wins at 2-1.
Well, I feel like I'm on like American Idol or something. I said at least I got 2 out of 3 votes.
Right. That's right. That's right.
You're going to Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. You got a golden ticket, so you're here now with us, and hopefully it won't be downhill for your career after interview. But we're definitely excited to have you on. I noticed that you've had a lot of great things, and Bubba, when we talk about some of the, I know you've had a couple professional wrestlers on the good wrestling, as I like to say, and Kyle can definitely chime in on that. But just give us an idea how you started the great thing called the Final Score on Facebook.
Well, you know, I've been a sports fan. I mean, diehard sports fan all my life since I was old enough to know what a sports was. Like football was my sport, but you know, a little bit of everything. And one guy told me a few years ago at one of my jobs that I knew more useless information than anybody he had ever known, because I could tell him anything about sports. And, you know, I just figured one day with all the social media and all the technology advancements, I said, you know, maybe it's time I put this useless information to work for me. And I just started the Final Score. Actually was just kind of doing like updates on different things, keeping people up on stories. And then it got to a point where one of my good friends that he had a radio show in Muppetsboro on 98.3 for years, probably the local sports expert around my area, Gaddis Hodges. He had me on I would call in every week. We do a mock NFL draft every year, and that just got the ball rolling. When his show went off the air, that kind of got the ball rolling with me, like, you know, maybe I should do something like that, and started doing live videos, and then started doing a show. A guy that was in contact with me about doing my own internet radio show, which is the Final Score, which we do every week. I've actually got two shows that come on every week. I've got a Final Score, and then I've got one of my old buddies from high school that me and him talk back and forth and do a Final Score show. But then it just, you know, idea just started popping in my head. Said, what if, you know, I see these guys on Facebook, approach them, you know, should I approach them about doing interviews? And Gaddis really talked to me, said, look, the worst thing they can tell you is no, and what have you lost? So got in contact with them. I think, you know, as far as wrestling goes, you know, I got in touch with a few wrestlers. I actually work with a independent wrestling association that's right here, Rage Wrestling, that I do camel work for. So I've got to know a lot of the guys. We did actually a wrestling podcast before I did Final Score with another. It was the other guy's podcast, but had a little experience there with doing interviews. And I think the first one I wanted to say was Kevin Salvador from North Carolina. And then that went so well, which I was nervous, so nervous. But he assured me after it was over that he couldn't tell. And then, you know, I said, well, you know, I started looking up ECU players, and because I've always been, since 83, I've been a diehard ECU fan. And Greg Grandison came on and did a great show with me. I said, you know, and he actually got the ball rolling on getting other guys. And said, look, any guys you need me to get in contact with, just let me know. If you want to do anything with them, I'll get the ball rolling for you. And it just went from there. You know, of course, some of the best ones, with being a Steelers fan that I've done, I got to interview LeVon Kirkland, former Clemson and Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker. And then to get the interview, I know two of you, I know Bubba's not a wrestling fan, but you other guys are wrestling fans. Get to interview the Russian Nightmare, Nikita Koloff, a couple of weeks ago. Oh, man, was that. That was just crazy that I was talking to Nikita Koloff. But, you know, all the guys have been great, and I'm just excited to hope I can keep building and getting bigger and bigger.
Well, what I was going to say is the very fact of I was telling Bubba earlier that in the non-traditional media like we are, we kind of have to stick together because we're like the redheaded stepchildren when it comes to media. Oh, yeah. Low man on the totem pole, so we all have to stick together, right?
Yes, sir, definitely. I have some guys that are in the local media, like on the radio, that kind of look out for me, and they're fans of the show. So, us that do the podcast and stuff like that, you're definitely right. We have to stick together.
Stevie, what other wrestlers have you had on besides Nikita?
I'm ashamed to say the guy's name escapes me, but I know it because I could tell you any other time if you hadn't asked me. The guy that did the Godfather podcast, what's his name now? He does the one with Shivani, and he does the one with Bruce Pritchard.
Conrad Thompson.
Conrad Thompson was one of my first interviews.
He was on the Force Objective also.
Yeah, he was a good guy. You know, he didn't hesitate to do the interview. I was kind of surprised. You know, could you take chances and ask guys?
Conrad's one of those people that believes in networking. He's gotten big, and he keeps getting bigger. Just added another podcast with Jim Ross called Grilling JR, and he just keeps growing and growing, and he's got an involvement with AEW and had those huge podcast conventions called StarCast. StarCast 3 is coming up in Chicago. He just did StarCast 2. In my opinion, off topic, but I think he may be going through the limit one too many times too soon, doing StarCast 3 already after just doing StarCast 2. But that's his money, not mine.
That's right. But yeah, he came on, like I said, he may have been the first one. He may have been before Salvador, and that went, that went about 10 to 15 minutes with him, and that, because I knew he was a busy man, didn't want to take up a lot of his time, but we kind of disagreed at the end on the current state of wrestling, I guess, as far as WWE goes. I was telling him that, and I stated, I'm going to tell you how I feel, I just told him that the storyline seemed stale, and at that time, that was when they were really trying to push Roman Reigns down your throat as a good guy, and people were booing him. And I said, by now, 10 years ago, he would have been heel, and he disagreed with it, which is fine. I don't have a problem. I know people don't agree with everything I say, but kind of got a little disagreement out of that. I was like, well, this is my first interview, and this is going like this, Maybe I need to rethink this, but it was all good though.
Yeah, and Conrad is always going to give his opinion, and I don't know how long ago did you do that interview with him? How long ago was that?
That's been probably about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, WWE's just gotten worse since then, I think you'd be more inclined to agree now because. Roman not being over is the least of their concerns.
Yeah, I've had him. I had Nikita. Like I said on the podcast I did before, which I'm running another Facebook page called Ringside Ramblings that is definitely doing more wrestling. I'm putting the old episodes of the podcast that me and my other partner used to do. A lot of independent guys that I talked to. I don't know how familiar you are with some of these guys, but there's one called the Pain Train, Preston Quinn. He's a throwback to the. It reminds me so much of Arn Anderson. Me and him are pretty tight, and he's actually agreed to do an interview with me, and actually is going to come on the show. And he's a big Cowboys fan. We're going to actually do a top 10 Dallas Cowboys of all time. So
speaking of guys who remind you of Arn Anderson, I know CW, and I invited him to come on the podcast a while ago, and we still ain't got him on. He said he'd be willing to do it. I ain't got CW Anderson on just yet, but he's a guy, obviously, well-known in the North Carolina Independence, former ECW star.
Yeah, he's big. He's been at several of the Razor Wrestling shows, and I'm telling you, as a lifelong wrestling fan, when this guy that runs, Charles Jones, who runs Rage Wilson, asked me, we got kind of tight because I'm actually a volunteer coach at a local private school of a football coach, and I was trying to get some fundraisers going, and this guy came to me about Rage Wrestling, and we got pretty close, and we're still all good friends, and he asked me about, I do videography too. He asked me about, doing the camera work at ringside, and I was like, are you kidding me? He's like, no, why? I was like, yeah, I'll do it. I'll definitely do it. And it's really, you look at it back in the old days, you think about back in the old days when the Crockett era, which was my favorite era of wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
And the guys are at ringside, but getting to be one of those camera guys and getting to see everything that's going on in the ring up close and like that, it's great. And getting to
you like Jackie Crockett. Jackie Crockett was a camera
Jackie
guy.
Jackie Crockett. That's what, yeah. Actually, that is my nickname that the guy gave me. You're the Jackie Crockett of Rage Wrestling. So I'm hoping maybe one day, I don't want to move up to David Crockett, because David Crockett was another little thing, but, he was out there. But David Crockett
one of the worst announcers of all time.
He was excited all the time, I'll put it that way.
Indeed.
But one of the funniest questions I asked Nikita, I don't know if you guys remember, was when Nikita sickled David Crockett while they were interviewing him. And I asked him, I said, what was his reaction? Did he know it was – I mean, I'm sure he knew it was coming, but how was his reaction after? I mean, was he hurt? And he said – And Nikita said, I really didn't ask. I really, I did my job, and that was all I knew. But I didn't ask it. I guess he was okay. He lived to talk about it. So
he's like 74 now.
Nikita was green when he got pushed. Way green. He really, was one of those guys. He didn't – not as bad as Goldberg with hurting people, similar push, the undefeated, unstoppable kind of gimmick. Nikita's gimmick and his look got him over, and that push, and Dusty definitely believed in him. And now he was over in his day. Now, when he took his little sabbatical and then came back around, he went away for about a year and then came back around 90. He won't never as over as he was with his first run.
Oh yeah.
But
he wasn't
as jacked up. Yeah.
He didn't look as like the dominating Russian nightmare.
Yeah, we've had a goal here on our podcast, and I will reach out to him again. I want to have Cornette on.
You better get ready for that one.
I'll be ready.
Nikita, actually, it was funny. Because I've actually reached out to a bunch of these older wrestlers about doing interviews and haven't had a look, except with Nikita. And we were texting back and forth, and that just sounds crazy to me when I said, I'm getting interview advice from Nikita Kolos right now. But he's talked back and forth with me, and really, really a great guy. He told me, he said, if you ever get it, he said, you need to get Ricky Morton. And he said, there's a funny story about the first time I ever got in the ring with tied up with Ricky Morton, but he tells it so much better than me. And, I'd love to get Ricky Morton to hear some of the stories. There's some stories I'm sure he could tell about Flair, which Flair is my all-time favorite, of course. But I would love to hear Morton and just talk about some stuff like that. And maybe one day I'll get him on there.
Rick Flair, great angle on PBS. They had their match at the outside of Charles. It may have been part of the Great American Bash Tour. Yeah, but building up to that.
On the helicopter.
Correct. Building up to that on TBS, one of my favorite spots, you can find it on YouTube, anybody out there is listening, is when, Flair comes out, with his sunglasses and all, and he getting in Ricky Morton's face, and, Ricky, I like the big girls. You like the little tiny, teeny girls. And pulls out a training bra and throws it at Ricky. And Ricky grabs Flair's sunglasses and stomps on them. And it's just good stuff. Little stuff like that. Simple things like throwing a training bra at him and him stomping his sunglasses. Not so much more heat now than the over-the-top crap they do because people believed it back then. And, it was just good stuff. I mean, I miss those days in wrestling. Hell, I miss the Attitude Era. I mean, I just about missed the CM Punk.
Yeah, about 10 years ago.
Yeah, like CM Punk, Daniel Bryan days from just back in 2012. I mean, it's so bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad now.
Yeah, and the thing that was different back then, and like you said, people believed it back then, but they told a story so much better than what they do today. That's one of the things I think I said to Conrad. I said they tell a story. They don't tell good stories. They tell a story so much better than that.
Well, and they kept the story simple. They kept the story simple. Personal issues or feuding, either personal issues or feuding over belts. One of the two.
And they were better at the one thing that's missing now is that nobody can talk. That's my
thing. Maybe they can. The problem is WWE doesn't give the guys a chance to talk. They script everything to the point where nothing comes across natural because they're worried about remembering what a writer told them to say. And we'll see maybe in AEW when they debut on TNT in November. Supposedly, they're going to let their guys talk. There's going to be bullet points, and you're going to have to be able to cut your own promos. So maybe we'll get to see some of that.
That'll be great.
And another thing, and you guys may disagree with me, but another thing I have a problem with WWF, and is one of the biggest things, what I can't hardly stand to watch, is Brock Lesnar.
He's awful.
As dominant as he is, to be given this little cakewalk that he's been given and not come on TV and defend a belt or wrestle on TV.
I'll defend it to a point. He's a draw.
You know,
he's a draw, and there's not many draws left. And, well, I do think it's getting to the point where people are getting sick of him now, and he's worn that out. But, you know, when that first started, I guess it's been about 3 years ago now he came back. When that first started and he was doing the limited schedule 3 or 4 years ago, however long it's been, he was a draw, and like I said, there's just not many left, so I didn't have a problem with it. Now that's been going on so long, people are sick of it, and, you know, it's time to cut it loose.
Well, the problem you have is with him is he's – the problem with him, and I know Jim Ross has talked about this before on his podcast, the other podcast he had, was the very fact when you have a guy like him, basically what it comes down to, it's kind of like what we're talking about. You go to the well too many times, and what I mean by that is you can't have a Brock Lesnar on television a lot, because if you do, then you want to talk about it, how the chewing gum losing its flavor. He's one of those guys you just bring in the big events. You don't have him. The problem they have is they don't have enough talent.
You could have him on TV all the time if he was willing to do it. You just couldn't run him on top constantly. You put him underneath. I mean, you do different things with him. They're trying to use him like an attraction. You know, back in the day, for example, to kind of make both your points, back in the day, Hogan wasn't on TV every week, but Hogan worked house shows every night. So Hogan was out there earning his keep. But you snap him off TV every week because he was a special attraction. They wanted people to pay and go see Hulk Hogan when he came to their town or when he was on pay-per-view.
Right,
yeah,
and like a main event,
have,
like on NBC.
Yeah, you didn't have the TV coverage back then that you do today either. You mean you had some on cable,
like
a Monday night show on cable, but you know you didn't have almost.
But you look back on you look at least on WWF programming back in the late '80s. You look at WWF Superstars, used to be the syndicated show. How many times did you see Hogan have a match up there? It was extremely rare.
Never. Hardly ever.
He was making an appearance, but he didn't have a match.
Correct.
But I'll tell you one guy that I really am disappointed to have pushed more. And I wish they would, because when it kind of flirted with his babyface, I was like, okay. And I even like him as a heel. Either way, I like him, but they need to push him more. There's a lot. I love that guy.
Yeah, Elias has got a good gimmick with his singing. He's charismatic. I like him better as a heel. I do think we should push him more. I agree with you. He's one of the guys that does stick out as having a personality. He's got some size to him. He's not 5 foot and do 25 flips in a match like half the roster now. So, no, I tend to agree with you. I think Elias could be a star if they used him right. The same with Bray Wyatt, you know, and Andrew, reworked Bray's gimmick and giving them the funhouse thing where he's like a deranged Mr. Rogers, which could work if they did it right, but they're not doing it right. That mask they gave him looks goofy as hell. And,
I just don't understand with creatives how that's going. I mean, I know Michael Hayes is up there, but I don't know if Michael Hayes is still drinking some of that Freebird whiskey that he used to drink back in the day.
Michael's still drinking the Jack Daniels, I'm sure.
Yeah, if you see some of the outfits he wears at some of these events, yeah, he's definitely drinking something.
He's a gimmick 24/7, and exactly. he lives the gimmick. And thanks, he looks, you know, and thanks, he still looks cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he does. He definitely does.
But, all right, pick it up, Stevie. If you want to say about creative and the WWE and Michael Hayes, it's fine. You want to pick up there?
But Michael Hayes, I think he's still drinking some of that Freebird whiskey, and he might need to come up a little bit and get creative back straight.
Well, Michael's a bit of a yes man. He has been for Vince now for years, you know, so I think that's part of the problem. And you got Bruce Prichard back there, and he's another yes man. And, you know, you need some people like Corny, like Jim Cornette on creative, that would challenge Vince. And I think WWE is doomed. I think Vince is out of touch. I think until Paul Levesque, Triple H takes over, I don't think there's much help.
When you look at
WWE.
You look at NXT, I mean, there's a much better product.
I'd a lot rather watch NXT than WWE.
Yeah, so and that's Triple H's baby. So I do think that'll when Triple H takes over, or Vince will just listen to more people and quit micromanaging.
I'm not sure that'll ever happen as long as he's around.
Well, you know, at one time Vince has shown in the past willingness to change. When you look back when he was losing the Monday Night War, and if AEW it turns into be a legitimate threat than WWE, then I think Vince will listen at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Until they've got some competition, he's gonna stick to what he's doing, and I really hope AEW can do something.
Well, guys, I think that Bubba's had a nice power nap now. You awake, Bubba?
No, hey. I've been wide awake the whole time. I've just been sitting here taking it all in, getting cultured.
Yeah, getting cultured.
Apparently I was deprived during my youth. I was not exposed to a whole lot of wrestling, so I was taking it in, trying to get caught up.
Your daddy had you, you know, playing football and baseball and watching football and baseball instead of watching a real sport.
Wrestling.
The sport of God, the sport of all sports, the king of sports, by God, professional wrestling.
Yes, good stuff.
Okay, so it's wrestling or wrestling?
Well, that depends on how ignorant you are, Bubba. If you want to say wrestling like an ignorant redneck, like the rest of these rednecks out here, you say wrestling. But where I'm from, it's wrestling. See, that's called a heel promo, Bubba. I'm cutting the promo on you.
We can definitely talk more wrestling. How about, can we talk some football? So Bubba can be awake now.
Let's do it.
Yeah. No, Stevie, go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to pitch it to you, Bubba. Actually, you know, with East Carolina, Bubba, with everything going on, and Kyle, Stevie, very happy with having Mike Houston. What do you think, Bubba?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Excited about having Coach Houston and staff. But before we talk present day, I know Stevie was talking how his Pirate fandom, so to speak, went back to that 1983 team. So, obviously, that's one of your favorite memories, I would guess. But in addition to the 1983 team, what are some of your other favorite teams and memories, whether it's more team-oriented or some of your favorite players throughout the years?
Well, of course, the Peach Bowl 91 team is probably my favorite team of all time because nobody really – you know, there was high hopes with them that year, but nobody really expected – what they got out of them, you know, and they were 7 points and a bad call away from being undefeated that year. And just to see it end how it ended, you're going up here, you know, of course, back then, ever since the 87 State wouldn't play, ever since that whole incident, 87 State wouldn't play ECU, and to see it come down to the Peach Bowl in the South, State versus ECU and the way it ended, the comeback and all that. That was probably my favorite team. Of course, the Carden and Justin Hardy teams, the Ruffin teams, they were some of my favorites because getting to introduce my daughter to Pirate football, and actually her first game was the Carolina game, the 70-41 blowout.
That's a good one to start with.
Hey.
She was hooked, and, you know, she has been ever since. In the last couple of years, it's been kind of rough. We did go, I think, the last game.
It's been kind of mow.
We went to a couple of games 3 years. I think it's been 3 years that we went to a couple of games. But, you know, hopefully, and I was really excited when the talk started about Coach Houston coming. He's been successful everywhere he went, and it was really disappointing though at first when I see what was the UNC Charlotte looked like he's going there, and I was like, God, we waited too long and we missed out on a great one, and then to see him back out of it, and it was just great. But I guess, you know, the 83 team really started it for me because my cousin introduced me to ECU. You know, and to listen to it on, you know, back then it wasn't a lot of ECU games on TV. So you listen to it on the radio, I think it was 93.3. I listened every Saturday afternoon. I was listening, you know, whether I was outside throwing football, I had it on. And just
who was calling the games in those days? Was that Jim Woods?
Who now?
Who was calling the games on the radio back in 83?
Who was the guy?
Didn't Jim Woods call some of our games? Yeah,
now, Kyle, you said 83?
Yes, correct.
83. Yes, Jim Woods.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, and then they had call-in shows after. I would call on the call-in shows after when they did it on the years to come. I would call in a couple of times, that I guess that kind of got the ball rolling with me. But my first game I ever went, my cousin actually became one of the managers for the football team. I think it was his sophomore year at ECU in 84. So to get to go up there, it was after 85 when he was a manager. To get to go up there, I went to his dorm room, and I just remember, and this name stuck out with me because I think the guy was in the same dorm. I don't know if this guy, you remember this guy, then Burke Holzclaw. Does that name ring a bell? He was a quarterback in 85, but I don't think he did too much there, but I just remember seeing him coming down the hall, and I was like, whoa. And, you know, I was hooked on ECU. My first game was in 84, though, the Temple game, September 8th of 84, in which Pirates lost. But the Temple team, if you go back and look, the head coach was Bruce Arians. And then on the roster was another former NFL head coach, Todd Bowl. So I've actually gotten – sitting here looking at my programs right now that I've got from past Pirate games, and you know, I was hooked. As far as favorite team goes, though, it has to be that 91 Peach Bowl team.
Steve, I got a question for you. I always ask this, and lots of times people can't answer it. What is your favorite losing season in East Carolina history?
Very popular question.
Okay, I'll put it to you. Let me see, and I'm kind of looking right now. There was a year that we played, because one of the things, and if you listen to Greg Gardeil's interview, one of the things that attracted him to ECU was the fact that they would play anybody. I mean, Penn State, Miami, the year they lost to Penn State 17-10 at Penn State, and they had them on the ropes at the end. That was one of my favorite losing things. But I guess the year Jimmy Johnson came to with Miami down to Ficklin, and after the game, his comments were, "I'm never coming here again. These people are crazy." So for a Miami, Florida head coach to say the Ficklin crowd was too crazy for him, I think that was pretty impressive.
And he did all right, right?
I think it was like, it may have been 86 or 87 was one of, I guess, my favorite losing year, if you had to look at a losing year as your favorite.
Well, yeah, 86 was my first year as a Pirate, so I guess I could argue that, too, because that's how I became hooked by going to a FCA day that Art Baker had, and the rest is history.
Yeah, you know, I always, even the lean years with East, you know, even when they had the lean years and the losing season, pitching was always packed. You know, up until these past couple of years, you know, pitching was always packed.
Yeah.
No matter how good the team, yeah, they always had that support. But
yeah, yeah, I always have fond memories of the 05 season, Skip's first year going 5-6, and I remember it almost like it was a winning season because it just felt so good to be playing good football again after that
yeah.
John Thompson fiasco. So I always look back at that 05 season and have to remind myself it was a losing season. And, you know, I'm looking ahead to this year with Mike Houston and wondering, you know, even if we go 5-7, it's going to feel so much better.
Well, to get more than 3 wins in a year again will be great.
Yeah.
But I think you know, I think it's on the rise again. You know, the people I talk to, whether it's in person or online, are really excited about it. You know, I think your tickets are going back, season tickets are going back up, Pirate
yeah,
Club
they are.
Membership is going back up. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a good year for ECU football. It may not be the best year we're going to have, but, you know, it's going to be a start.
Well, I can tell you one thing.
Yep. I was going to chime in with, I would certainly agree with Kyle, since we're on the topic. See, this is these are the things that you talk about during the summer because you're so starved for football. We're talking about our favorite losing seasons. But since we're on the topic, in addition to that 2005 season, very much along those lines, the 89 and 1990 seasons, not necessarily 11-1, but you saw a quality product on the way because in 89 we were 5-6 and in 90, then we were 5-5-1. I think the record books may say 6-5 because of a forfeit that year, the game that we tied against La Tech at Dowdy Ficklin, or I guess as it was then, Ficklin Stadium. But those years, you had close calls against Georgia in 1990.
Oh, yeah.
You also had close calls in the 89 season up at the Carrier Dome where we got beat 18-16, I think it was, on the last second field goal by the Orange. And then we also had a near miss against a ranked Pittsburgh team when Mike Gottfried was their head coach. We lost after leading 21-0, suffered a 47-42 defeat at Old Pitt Stadium. So those were three close calls, and you saw a much improved product after the Art Baker years.
Yeah, you kind of get the same feeling of how this year, or hope how, that's how this year is going to be. It, like you said earlier, if it's a 5-6 or 5-7 year, that's going to be exciting for us, you know, considering what we've seen in the past 3 years.
No doubt about it. I was going to say that, you know, Stevie, with the way things are right now, people are hungry. I tell you one thing, the best thing that can ever happen for Houston to come in is, I've told this story a couple times, but we're standing there in the end of spring practice, and we're standing there at the end zone there close to the Murphy Stadium, Murphy Center end of the stadium, and all of a sudden he said, "That's exactly why you guys are 3-9. And all the stuff that have happened, and the reason I say that, and Bubba mentioned the 90 team, with Kyle talking about 05, I think there's a good chance that you're going to see these guys play way better, not only competitive in games, win more games than the experts. And you know why I say that? Because we have Athlon saying that we're going to go 4-8, 1-7 in the conference. You have Five Dimes saying that the over-under is 3.5. Well, how many games
guys,
are going to
win? I was thinking about that. When you guys said the over-under was 3.5 wins, and that's what it was last year. And then you guys said Cincinnati's over-under was 5.5 wins, and that's what it was last year. And are you guys sure y'all weren't looking at last year's projected win totals? Because
I don't think anybody failed
Cincinnati was 5.5 wins.
I thought the same thing, Kyle, and I haven't researched it myself, but according to Clip Brock, he thought the same thing, but then he said he looked it up, and it was this year's number, so we'll see.
That is shocking to me. Not really ours, but for them to have Cincy at 5.5 wins, I mean, that's almost, to me, so odd that you don't want to bet it. That almost seems like a sucker bet to take the over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It sounds really low, but, I mean, when you look at it, Stevie, when you look at that schedule, I mean, I was telling the guys, my God, you look at, and Kyle and I were talking last night off air, you look at the schedule, and I could kind of argue 4-8 if we had South Carolina and Virginia Tech on the non-conference. But when you have Gardner Webb and William and Mary, I mean, if we don't win those games, we need to shut down the program.
Dave, I think the problem is our lack of road game success and our lack of even competitiveness on the road. I think that's where the problem comes in. I think they probably think we're going to win the FCS game 5 times. I'm picking up and Athlon. I think that's probably where the problem lies. Even though UConn was god awful and ODU was god awful, we got to play at both those places. So I think we should win both those games, and I think Mike Houston should be able to install enough mental toughness to go on the road and get a couple of road wins. But I do think that's where those, you know, you're seeing the 4-8 and the 3.5 wins projected coming from. But I'm like y'all. I really would be disappointed if we don't at least get 5. I think that much of Mike Houston. I'll tell you what. If we don't get 5, I know that there's a lot of work he's had to do, because he's a great coach and the staff, you know, it's a solid staff. We got some guys up here that know what power football's about, and I think 6-6 is a very realistic possibility. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, you know, as much as the experts say, and you know, you don't play it on paper, you play it on the field, and you don't know what kind of motivation Houston might have, and get these guys back from structure again, and hold them accountable. And I think that's one of the big issues there, was hold them accountable for things to do, and don't let them give up when they get down. That was one of the things I saw over the last 3 years, especially when we got down, we just acted like it was over. Except for a few instances, you know, but of course they got pumped up for the Carolina game and were able to come back from that and get a big win there. But
plus Carolina was awful too. I mean,
oh my God, yeah.
Carolina wasn't the best, but still, if you're an ECU football player and you've got to get motivated for a Carolina game, something is wrong.
No, I'm sure. I don't think motivation's been the problem. I think motivation had became a problem after losing so much. But you just don't have a clue what you're doing, particularly up until this past season on the defensive side of the ball, it had been a nightmare. I mean, there had been no direction over there, just complete garbage. I think coaching staff difference is going to be night and day. My fear is just how much work does Mike and these guys have to do to get us mentally prepared. There was so much BS I think we had to concentrate on in spring practice. Teaching these guys how to practice, it makes me wonder how far did we get on system installation.
Well, you know, and another thing, you're going in now, and no offense to Scotty Montgomery, but you're going in now with a guy that's a proven head coach. I mean, he's been successful everywhere. There's guys that are great coordinators that can't be great head coaches. And,
Scotty Montgomery wasn't even a great coordinator. Scotty Montgomery sucks.
But, you know, I just giving him the benefit of the doubt on that. You know, I'll give him the coordinator part, but he was in way over his head as far as being a head coach. I think you're seeing that also if you look at Florida State. I don't know how he'll do this year, but last year I can't even recall the guy's name now.
Willie Taggart, but I know it very well. Willie Taggart.
For whatever reason, David hates Willie Taggart.
I don't hate him as a person. I think he's overrated.
Taggart's a solid coach. He for whatever reason, if you look at his track record at Western Kentucky and at South Florida. When he goes somewhere, the first year or two, he struggles. Now, Florida State, they're not going to give him the time that South Florida and the Western Kentucky gave him. I think he made a move in the right direction.
If he's bad this year, he's done.
No, I agree. He made a move in the right direction hiring Kendall Briles as his offensive coordinator. But I think he's going to at least have to get the 8 wins for them to give him a year three.
Well, I can tell you firsthand, the first year I was head coach, and I had been assistant for a while, the first game we played 8-man football. We played, I don't know if you heard of a team up in Raleigh called Word of God.
Yes.
But, yeah, they have some recruits, I guess what you would call it there. But the first game we played against was them, and I was sitting on the sidelines. And, you know, I had game planned all week. I got on the sidelines, and that first game, I don't know if it was first game jitters or what, I just was lost. And I looked at one of the games Florida State this year. I saw that same look in Willie Taggart's eyes. I was like, I am lost. I don't know what I'm going to do here.
Well, Willie Taggart's been a head coach for 2 other places before he went to Florida State.
Yeah.
He was 1 year at Oregon, though. I mean, he was one year
at Oregon. Yeah, I forgot about the 1 year at Oregon. And, yes, 1 year at Oregon. But he was at South Florida and at Western Kentucky where he had success.
Right.
And then 1 year at Oregon, which I even forgot about that, Dave.
I just feel like with not bashing the guy, I was not happy with – I know he's a fan of Russ, but I was not happy with him doing what he did at the end of the South Florida game. But ultimately – I can live with that. My biggest thing is as a coach, when you're coaching Florida State, that's almost like, I mean, for people that are Florida State fans, that's like a professional team, just like Alabama. It's a brand name. And yeah. I think that I'll argue that he's probably a good coach, but it's not the right fit for Florida State. How about that? I'll give you that call.
Well, I mean, if you look at his recruiting ties, he's a perfect fit for Florida State. He's a masterful recruiter in the state of Florida. I don't know that he's going to get it done to the level they want to win at Florida State. Is he going to go and win the ACC? Is he going to out-coach Coach Sweeney at Clemson? Probably not, and that's what Florida State wants to do.
Right.
He'll be able to get the talent. He's a hell of a recruiter. He's going to get the talent at Florida State, but can he win at the level that they want to win at, which is the level they used to win at, under Bobby Bowden when Jimbo first got there?
And you have a situation where probably will happen. If he doesn't get it done this year, he probably gets fired, and then a guy will come in and have great talent and win.
And I agree. And last year, what happened there was unacceptable. I mean, they were terrible. So I think, you know, I'll say 8 wins, maybe 7-5 would save his job. I would expect them to be drastically improved this year. We will see.
Yeah. Well. We'll have to wait and see right there. We're talking the Pirates, you know, with one game. I haven't mentioned this to Bubba and Kyle. I want to get you guys and Stevie. I want to get your thoughts on this. I'm not a fan of the Thursday night games. I used to be. We don't usually do very well. But I have to say, I'm looking forward to that Temple game. You guys, how do you feel about that going in? I know we're way early. We still got some time. We're in the earliest part. We're barely the summer.
I think it's our best chance to beat Temple since Ruffin was here. I mean, yeah. They got a brand new head coach who comes over from Northern Illinois. We get to play them in Greenville. They lost some talent off last year's team. Coach Collins moved on to Georgia Tech.
Right.
I don't particularly like it being on a Thursday night.
I'm not sure.
And I'll tell you why. Because our first two home games are against FCS opponents. And then that's our first home game against an FBS, and it's against Temple, and it's on a Thursday. If that game was on a Saturday, if we're at least 3-2 at that point, meaning let's say we beat the two FCSs and then we beat ODU, and we're 3-2, and we have Temple coming in here on a Saturday, that game would be our biggest crowd of the year probably.
Right. And it's fall break, I believe, right?
Correct. So on a Thursday night, I think, you mentioned it being fall break. How long does fall break last? It may help us being on a Thursday night. Are the kids still there?
Fall break is Thursday, I believe, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay, well, you know what? Then from that aspect with the students, some of the students may hang around for Thursday night and go to the game where they work for Saturday.
Yeah, it's kind of like Thursday through Sunday or Thursday through Monday. It's not a lot, but I'll say this in fairness to the students. Hey, if we start out great, somehow play competitive or beat NC State, or even if you're 3-2 going that game, you'll see the students stay. But if we're struggling, then it won't be a big crowd. The same way with people that are not students.
Even if we're 3-2, and you people will look and say, well, two of those are over FCS, one of them would be over ODU, most likely. Still, that's matching last year's win total the year before.
In the first month.
Yeah, exactly. So there'll be some excitement, particularly, let's say we beat the Gardner well, we beat William & Mary, we beat ODU, and we're competitive against NC State and Navy.
Right.
There'll be some excitement.
Yeah.
I promise you this, guys. We'll definitely have a larger crowd than we did the last time we played Temple at home in 2017. That noon kickoff, and it was fall break also that weekend, and that combined with the noon kickoff and the way we were playing so poorly, it was a ghost stadium.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I definitely think if you're 3-2 going into a Thursday night game in Greenville, that some of the students will definitely hang around for that.
No doubt. And you look at basically, Stevie, I think that we were talking about last year, how do you get 6 wins under Montgomery? We didn't, but I really believe that you've got to win 3. Basically, the formula is this year you got to win 3 in September. Then you have to win. You have to steal a game or two in October, and then win a couple in November, and there's your 6. But it looks like this year with 2 FCS, we're going to have to win 7. So you'll have to win a couple and maybe 3
there
in November.
You know, to get to a bowl, most likely there will be a chance, depending on what happens to 6 to get us to a bowl. If there's not enough bowl eligible teams,
right.
6-6, even with 2 FCS, supersedes any 5-7. There's an outside chance of getting there at 6-6. But to me, the bowl game is an afterthought. If we just get 6-6, it'll be a huge success. And the formula, yeah, you need to win 3 in September, most likely. And then if you can win 1 in October, there's 2 in November that are very winnable, Tulsa and Greenville and at UConn. So
yeah.
You just – And to me, there's some winnable games in October. Temple,
that USF is
Temple
home.
And Greenville, South Florida and Greenville.
Yes.
You get one of those.
And you don't know, and I'll say this, with Mike Houston, and I'm going on a limb here, but we actually had a chance in the game against UCF last year. You know, Holton fumbles that ball, unfortunately, but we were holding them a lot closer for a while than I really
thought.
Yeah,
they didn't have their quarterback.
Right.
They – You never know. Had we tied that thing up, UCF made it came alive and just pulled away by 3 touchdowns all of a sudden. But we were competitive with them. I mean, you never know. I mean, it's like you said. I mean, typically in a first-year head coach, you play better towards the end of the season. So having winnable games in September is a good thing because it could set you up to make a run at the end of the year.
And, Stevie, one day I was telling the guys, I have it as an L right now, but, man, if somehow you have been a Pirate fan a long time like these guys as well, if somehow you could beat NC State and pull off the upset in Raleigh that first game for our fan base, all hell could break loose.
Yeah, it could be worse than, you know, what they claim we did in 87. But, you know, and especially, you know, I think they need to be a little fired up with some of the comments that Doran made after the game last year. You know, that was kind of taking a shot there. But, you know, like I said earlier with Carolina, if you can't get motivated for the state game, you don't need to be on the field. And, you know, to be competitive with them would be one thing. But to win, oh, my gosh, you would see Pirate Football Nation would go crazy again. If we beat State at their place first game of the year.
Can you guys imagine the parties downtown on East Carolina on August 31st, that Saturday night, Labor Day weekend, if we were to win that game? And also, I'll tell you another thing that I'm looking forward to is if somehow we can win that game. Those James Madison coaches last year, they're now our coaches this year, they had State on the ropes. And I know personally, I talked to them, they want this game bad. And I can tell you right now, if somehow East Carolina pulls off that win, I would kill to be at that press conference for not only Doran but also with Mike Houston.
Yeah, Doran would be in tears.
It's the worst day of my life, my career.
Yeah,
everyone who said that.
Yes, I do. He said the losing to us was the worst day, one of the worst days of his career, and then he lost to us again. So,
Well, it happens. It happens. And Stevie, I tell you what, it's going to be exciting, and we're very excited to have you. Definitely want to talk to you more. We've got some exciting things coming up. We would love to have you involved with, and certainly on the podcast. And how can people find? I wanted to mention this. Two more questions I got for you. What eight-man team do you coach for? Do you coach?
I've coached Northeast Academy. It's a small private school in there. Get ready for the name of this town. It's a little town called Lasker, North Carolina. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Yes, actually, I was up there. I actually do color for. Yeah, I do color on Magic 95.9 with Bill Benjamin at the for Lawrence Academy. So we were up there.
Really? Okay. So you probably saw me up in the booth. But we actually combined. We had to. Our numbers are so low. I graduated from Northeast in 91. We were the last team to play 11-man. We played 13 guys. So we played Ironman football, a lot of us. But we went to 8-man, and then this past couple of years, we had actually combined with a rival school close by at Scotland Neck or in Hobgood, North Carolina, Hobgood Academy.
Oh, yeah, Hobgood Academy, yeah.
And we were able to combine with them. And in the last 2 years, and even with it, we combined with them, I think, we had 16 guys, but we managed to win two state championships. The last two state championships we won that. So it's been pretty cool. It's been a good story to tell, you know, combining with the rival school to do it. You know, a lot of the other teams, especially after we had the success we've had, didn't like it, but they voted on it to start with. So, yeah, they didn't like it when we came out on top at the end. But, you know, I've been doing it for about 10 years now, and it's been really great to come back to your alma mater and be able to coach again. It's the closest thing to getting back on the field. Which, if you see me, I'm an undersized guy. I played – I was in high school, I was 5'6", 145 pounds, playing center and nose guard. And, you know, I could hold my own. I actually played against a guy that started all 4 years at Virginia Tech on the offensive line. And funny story, my cousin went to school with him, and I think they had told him the first couple of possessions, you know, take it easy on 55. If you see 55 up, you take it easy on him. Well, I didn't know it, so I'm not going to overpower the guy at my size, so I shot the gap. And I got in the backfield a couple of times. Well, the third time, all I can tell you is, do you remember the scene from the movie Rudy where – he gets in the offensive lineman's face at practice, tells him, you know, do your job. I'm the defensive end for Purdue. Yeah, when Rudy got planted, there's still an imprint on my body on that field where that guy planted me. Yeah, but it's a great. I love working with the kids, and when you see a kid actually, you know, get it, and see him come back and say, you know, you taught me more than just about football. You taught me lessons in life. You know, that makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, you know, what's funny, Stevie, I told everybody that I took a trip to Alaska, you know, so it sounds like to come up there. And,
you know, back in school, we would take, you know, play basketball too, and we would go on road trips. I remember going to a fast food restaurant, and the lady asked, where are you guys from? I was from Alaska. I said, yeah, you flew all the way over here from Alaska. And said, you played well. Yeah, I said, yeah, we're that good. They flew us all the way over here to play these guys around here. But actually, Alaska is on the map. You know, we have a celebrity in Alaska, which is the home of, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Chris Daughtry, rock star.
Oh, yeah.
Guy was on American Idol. Mm-hmm. Chris Daughtry actually grew up down the road from me. He was a little bit younger than me, but we knew of each other, and
I did not realize he was from Northeastern North Carolina.
Yeah, I did.
Well, if you listen to some of the stuff, they all play it out like he moved to Virginia, and they all play it like he's from Virginia. But
yeah, it pretty much is.
He came back a couple of times. Actually, after he got voted off Idol, he came back and did a concert at the football field out here. And it's put us on the map. I'll put it that way.
That's really cool. Well, Stevie, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll definitely have you back on, man, and appreciate the time. I know we probably talked longer than maybe. Hopefully we didn't overstay our welcome with you.
Oh, no, thank you guys for having me. Look, like I tell some of these guys I interview,
I could talk all night about football, about ECU football. I think Zion Kumala, when we talked, I said, you know, I hated it. It was only an hour because I could have talked for you know, at least a couple more hours with him. But it's been great. I hope you guys will have me on again. Hopefully I'll bump into you. I plan on coming to a couple of games, at least a couple of games this year. Hopefully I'll bump into y'all in one of those games.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome, man. Good luck to Final Score. We'll continue. Keep doing the great work. And we'll definitely have you back on soon.
All right. Thank you guys so much. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Sure thing. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Great interview with Stevie. Man, he's an interesting guy. I love talking wrestling with him, Bubba. I know you really can't get into that. Me and Dave do. And obviously Stevie loves it. I had a lot of fun talking wrestling with him. And obviously ECU Pirate Football. Again, check him out on Facebook. What's this page called again?
The Final Score.
The Final Score. They're on Facebook. And check him out. Go like his page. And he does some podcasts, too, as you found out during the interview. Very interesting guy, somebody that we'll associate with so-called New Media. He's a partner in New Media. So you try to be friendly with the guys like that and help each other. And great to have him here on our podcast. And check his stuff out, man. Guys like that, you know, you could look at it as competition, but there's no need to. Let's all help each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Stevie does a good job with the Final Score. I know recently for you Pirate football fans, obviously a lot of you guys are listening to the podcast, so give it a listen. I know his most recent Pirate football guest, if I'm not mistaken, was Greg Gardele, a nose guard on that 1991 Peach Bowl team.
Yeah, absolutely. And he said he recently had the Russian Nightmare Nikita Koloff on, so any of you guys wrestling fans, check that out. Bubba, what else we got, man? What else is going on in the world of Pirate Athletics?
Another thing I wanted to mention, Harold Varner III, that's what he was playing up at the Travelers Championship at TPC River Highlands in Connecticut over the weekend. And Harold finished tied for 21st, and so a good showing for HV3. He finished the tournament at 6 under par. It was a par 70 course, and he shot 69, 66, 72, 67. So it was just that third round that got Harold a little bit, but still a solid showing nonetheless. So good for HV3. We look forward to hopefully having him on the show down the road. Tonight, Kyle, Vanderbilt, even the championship series out in Omaha. The Wolverines had taken game one 7-4, but the Commodores are behind the strong pitching performance of Kumar Rocker. He went 6 1/3, struck out 11, and the Commodores posted a 4-1 victory to force a winner take all tomorrow night in game three of that series out in Omaha. We will have Eric Backich, a former Pirate, and then also, obviously now the head coach at Michigan, he will be on the program here in the next week or two. Look forward to catching up with him. We also need to talk about Pirate football recruiting. What a job that Coach Houston and his staff seem to be doing on the recruiting trail. 13 commitments now. 10 of those are on the defensive side of the ball, and it's pretty much, it spans up and down the East Coast, folks. You have 4 from North Carolina, and 2 from Virginia, 2 from Washington, D.C., and then 1 each from Florida, South Carolina, Maryland, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. So Coach Houston really emphasized what his recruiting philosophy and the areas that he and this staff are going to be targeting, and they have certainly held true and stuck by that thus far. Some specifics about...
No doubt.
Yep, no doubt. Some specifics regarding the most recent commitments, the ones that we haven't talked about. I'll go in chronological order. C.J. Crump was the 10th commitment of this class. He is a 6-foot, 170-pound defensive back out of Greensboro Page High School. Not a tremendous offer list thus far, but you certainly can't always go by that. I think it's somebody that we're on early, and I trust our very experienced staff and their evaluations of these young men. CJ Well, first of all, Page is an extremely successful program, so he comes from a winning background, and that's a strong positive to note. His other FBS offer, easy for me to say, was UMass. And so good to have CJ on board. Another recent commitment, also a defensive back, Sean Tucker. Sean is 6 feet, 170 pounds. He's from Woodson High School in D.C. He had a tremendous offer list. He's been offered by Wisconsin, West Virginia, UVA, Indiana, Temple, and then also the Cincinnati Bearcats. Then Taylor Jackson, who's also from Woodson High School, so a teammate of Sean Tucker. You have he's a 6 foot, 210-pound athlete. He plays defensive back right now, but he's a very versatile, flexible guy. He can play a number of positions on the defensive side of the ball, which is something that really benefits ECU with our 4-2-5 scheme. He has an offer sheet that is consisting of Georgia Tech, Boston College, Indiana, Pittsburgh, West Virginia, Temple, Air Force, and others. So some strong offers for those two guys from Woodson High School in D.C. And then our most recent commitment, our 13th commitment, came today, today being Tuesday the 25th. And that commitment was from Jason Romero Jr. From Scotland County High School, 6'4", 235-pound defensive end. He was a Duke commitment. He had committed to the Blue Devils in last September, and he remained committed to them to early December when he decommitted and reopened his recruitment. And so the former Duke commit, who also had Wake Forest and Temple offers, is now committed to East Carolina and head coach Mike Houston. And one of the things that I really like that these guys are all stating, and this isn't so uncommon, but they're talking about how they really sense a family atmosphere with this new coaching staff. And a couple of them were talking about how they, as soon as they got on campus and everything they saw, they knew they wanted to be a Pirate. So it seems like recruiting is going very well. I don't put a whole lot of stock into the recruiting rankings, and I don't think you do either. We know how those things go. But I think as of right now, for what that's worth, with 24/7 Sports, the Pirates are ranked something like 61st or 62nd in the country and somewhere in the top two or three in the American. So recruiting going seemingly very well for Coach Mike Houston and staff, and it's good to see.
No doubt. And you mentioned the kid that was a Duke commitment earlier and then had an offer from Wake. I mean, he had offers from Duke and Wake. Clearly you got something between the ears. So that's a good thing. And he's concentrating a lot on the defensive side of the ball early. A lot of skilled guys out there, you know, you can always get receivers and running backs. So we need to get these defensive linemen and get some offensive linemen in here. And that's something that I think we haven't done a good job recruiting the last several years. Maybe going all the way back to Ruffin. We didn't do the best job recruiting, non-skilled positions. So it'll be interesting to see if that trend continues under Coach Houston.
Yeah, we really were lacking on the defensive side of the ball, particularly, like you said, in the defensive front. So it's good to see all these commitments, but particularly ones like Jason Romero, who a very solid defensive end prospect. Taking a look at some of the things we have headed our listeners' way, we'll be catching up with East Carolina women's basketball coach Kim McNeil. She's been on the job for about 3 months now, so we'll catch up with her, see how she's getting settled in to her new job and learning the roster, and talk to her specifically about the five new pieces the Lady Pirates are welcoming this summer as they move into the 2019-20 season. And we'll also catch up with head track and field coach Kurt Kraft. He does an excellent job and has done so for several years, carrying on what Bill Carson built. So We'll catch up with him, talk about his recruiting haul, which consisted of 25 new Pirates. We'll talk to Eastern North Carolina baseball legend George Whitfield. Coach Whit, he was out in Omaha for about the duration. He had to return home to tend to some things, but it's going to be great catching up with Coach Whit, who was on Keith LeClair's initial staff and served in a variety of baseball capacities throughout Eastern North Carolina and beyond. He's a Hall of Famer in the North Carolina sports world. He was inducted back in 2005. And then we'll also talk to, you always see such a beautiful facility at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium in terms of the turf. Also Clark LeClair and ECU's other athletics facilities. And so when that happens, that's because of Joey Perry and his tremendous staff. So we'll catch up with the sod father, as Troy Dreyfus on Pirate Radio deemed him. So I believe that was Troy. Maybe it was either Troy or a clip, but nonetheless, Joey Perry is the sod father, and we'll talk to him here in the near future.
All right, brother, sounds good, man. You want to tell everybody where they can find us on social media?
Yeah, give us a follow on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at TheSportsObjective, like and follow us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We certainly appreciate all you listening, and that's what our listens. Looks like we're well on pace to set another monthly record for 2019. And we have already surpassed what we did in 10 months from March to December last year when we started the podcast. So we can't thank you enough for tuning in. We really appreciate you listening, and we have a lot of tremendous content headed your way. Kyle, do you have anything before I wrap things up?
No, that's it. It's just everybody needs to like us and follow us and all that good stuff, and keep listening, man. You know, it's listeners needs to keep going up where you're listening now. Tell a friend, tell somebody to listen, share the podcast. You're listening now, so we appreciate the hell out of you, but you need to get some of your friends to listen. If there's an East Carolina Pirate fan out there, let them know about the Sports Objective podcast. Tell them where they can find it. Most Pirate fans have that TuneIn app because of Pirate Radio and the Pirate IFG Sports Network, and tell them it's on TuneIn. We try to upload the episodes to YouTube. And anywhere else, if you got an iPhone, there's a little icon up there that says podcast. You can listen to it there. So let your friends know to check out Bubba, David, and Kyle on the Sports Objective.
If you have an idea for a guest, or you'd like to reach out to us for any reason, whatever that may be, reach out to us at thesportsobj@gmail.com. Otherwise, hope everyone is having an excellent week, and we look forward to talking with you again soon. For Kyle from LaGrange Barber, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum, and you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time, as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.